Welcome back. We have reached a point where I have stated the definition of what counts as a religious belief. I had it up on the board and took it down for this next segment. But just to review and remind you, a belief is religious if and only if it is a belief in something as divine, that is self-existent, the divine reality that produces everything else, or it's a belief in how the everything else depends on the divine, or it's a belief about how humans come to stand in proper relation to the divine. Where the divine is whatever it is that everything else depends on, however that's conceived. So it may be thought of as God or Brahmanatman or atoms. The ancient Epicureans put atoms in that slot. The Pythagoreans put numbers. There are all kinds of candidates for the divine reality that everything else depends on. But they're all religious beliefs because they're beliefs about divinity, about how everything depends on the divine reality, and about how humans can come to stand in proper relation to the divine reality. So now I'm going to take up objections to this definition and try to cover most of the main ones that usually come up and show you why they don't work, they don't succeed. Let's take the first one that says, look, there are a lot of gods in different religions that don't fit this definition. Just think about the gods of ancient Greece. There was Zeus and all his cohorts, Dionysius, and so on. None of these were beings that produced everything else. They didn't do that at all. The same thing about the gods of Rome. There's Jupiter and Neptune and so on, the whole host of them. And none of them is the creator of everything else. That just doesn't work. And you're right. It doesn't matter, because those gods were not thought to be divine. They were brought into being by the divine, if you look at the myths of each of those theologies. The Greek gods, according to Homer, were brought into existence out of the self-existent reality, a reality that he gives no account of the origin of. It's just there. And he calls it Okeanos. Out of Okeanos were generated the heavens, the earth, gods, and humans. So none of the gods are divine per se. They just have more divine power in them than humans do. So they can do things humans can't. And it's good to be on their good side rather than the bad side, because they can flame you up if they don't like you, and they may be able to help you out if they do. That's the way that works out. It works out the same for the Roman gods. In the Roman myths, Numen was the name for the divine. That was the power, the divine power that produced everything and was in everything. And there was more Numen in a god than a human, so the gods didn't have to die, whereas humans did. This is what lies behind and makes more sense of the claims of a number of the Roman emperors to be gods. They argued that there's more Numen in them than the average bloke in the street. Therefore, they are a god, even though they have to die. That's their only difference from the other gods. So they called themselves mortal gods. And if you remember, a couple of them were loony enough to try to test that. The story is that Caligula went down to the ocean and ordered the waves to stop, to test the extent of his divinity, how much divine power he had in him. In the Polynesian islands, you have the same thing. There are gods, but then there's this divine power called mana that's in everything. The gods have more mana than humans do, but if a member of your tribe can throw a spear further than anybody else and run faster, it's because he has more mana than you do. If this field produces more crops than this one, there's more mana here. That's the way that works. So that it's true that in many traditions, gods and goddesses are not the creators of everything else. They are not divine per se. They are not self-existent. They were brought into existence by the divine power, which is impersonal, and which can't be approached or worshipped. So you approach and try to butter up the gods by praising them and offering sacrifices and whatever to get on their good side, because that's as near as you can come to standing in right relations to the divine power. So I think that more than amply answers that objection. The fact that so many gods are not divine per se, they are not self-existent and bring into existence everything else, is the reason this definition has been missed by so many people or resisted. There's another objection that goes like this. But wait a minute. There are beliefs about something being self-existent and generating everything else. There are beliefs like that in science. You can't tell me that that's religion when it occurs in physics. And my reply is, no, why not? What's the difference where it occurs? What's the difference whether you say it's some kind of quantum reality that's purely physical that generates everything else? What's the difference whether it occurs in physics or not? Isn't it still a substitute for God? Isn't it a replacement for God? Isn't it a replacement for Brahmanatman in Hinduism? For the Tao in Taoism? Of course it is. It couldn't fail then to be religious. It's an alternative to other religious beliefs. This point is a very sore point with atheists who want to think that science is the substitute for religion. We do science instead of religion. And it's a sore point because if this definition is correct, and I think the evidence here is overwhelming, then they are not giving you an alternative to religion, but an alternative religion. They're giving you an alternative divinity belief against your divinity belief, while pretending that theirs isn't a divinity belief at all. I was explaining this one time to a fellow graduate student who was an atheist materialist, and he interrupted me and said, "Show me any belief that I hold that's religious in any sense, and I'll give it up on the spot." So after I wrote The Myth of Religious Neutrality, and I sent him a copy, and said, "Remember when we, hey Buzz, remember when we used to talk about this stuff?" He was, at that point, he was dean of Boston Law School. And he wrote back a very nice letter. He said, "I've had to take back a lot of things I said when I was a graduate student." It was very gracious of him. But the point is that still, that there are a lot of resistance to this definition because it means there's really no escaping regarding something as divine. Now let me make that point and make an argument for it. Think for a moment about the totality of reality. All that is. All that is has to be self-existent, either in whole or part, because there's nothing else for it to depend on. I'm letting that sink in for a minute. If we're talking about all there is, then the reason it's there is that either the whole of it or some part of it is self-existent. There's nothing else for it to depend on. So it doesn't come into being and pass away. The Hindu, Buddhist, Taoist traditions say it's the whole that's self-existent. Brahmanatman or the Dharmakaya or nothingness, those are being itself that's in everything, and it's the only real reality. So the whole is the self-existent reality. Judaism, Christianity, and Islam say, no, it's part. It's the part we call God. It transcends all the rest and has called all the rest into existence and sustains it. But one or the other of them has to be true. Either it's the whole or it's some part. And the totality then has to be or contain, include, that which is self-existent. So that old philosophical question, why is there something rather than nothing, can only be answered one way, because something is self-existent. And that's the way humans have always answered it. So it doesn't matter whether you say it's matter that's self-existent, it's space, it's mathematics, logical laws, math and physics, sensations and logic. These are all proposals that have been made in the history of philosophy. It's a long parade of mix and match combinations trying to find what it is that can explain everything else, but it itself doesn't need explaining. They all are accorded the role that God is accorded in Christianity, Judaism, and Islam. And so they are all, in that respect, those are religious beliefs, whether they're embedded in a scientific theory or not. It doesn't matter where it occurs, right? It doesn't matter if it occurs in an essay in Good Housekeeping magazine, or it occurs in a poem, or what's the difference where it occurs? If it's a belief in something as the self-existent reality on which all else depends, that's a religious belief. And that's the only thing that they all have in common. Now, let's get that straight, too. Another objection is, wait a minute, pal. You're calling those beliefs religious when they occur in science. Nobody worships numbers anymore. They don't pray to them like the ancient Pythagoreans. Nobody worships matter. Nobody sings hymns to force fields or makes prayers to quantum entanglement. That's ridiculous. There's no worship. There are no rites. There are no rituals. There are no sacraments, there are no holy days. That's right. That's correct. But so what? A belief doesn't have to have those accompaniments in order to be religious. Indeed, some of the most widely spread religions in the world, Hinduism and Buddhism, don't have any worship. Now, you'll say to me, wait a minute, I've seen films of them worshiping and so on. There are different forms of Hinduism and Buddhism, but each has the pure, the real theology, is that of the Brahmin Hindus, and they believe that all these gods and goddesses and feast days and all that, that's all for the common people who can't understand the real theology. The real theology is that there's nothing to worship. And there are no rites, sacraments, holy days, nothing in Brahmin Hinduism. Neither is there in the purest form of Buddhism, in Theravada Buddhism, for example, or in some of the Mahayana. Now, worship has crept into that tradition. Again, that's regarded as something for the average person. The common folk need this because they can't accept, they can't grasp the real truth, which is that the divine is nothingness. It's nothing you can conceive or think of. It's nothing you can describe. It's not personal, so there's no worship, and so on. That comes as a shock to a lot of people to find that those things that we think of right away when we think of religion aren't associated with the purest forms of Hinduism and Buddhism and Taoism. So, this objection doesn't work either. There's another one that arises in the same way. I've made this point to people in presenting this, and they have said, well, I think that the difference between what you're calling a divinity belief when it arises in a science, and the difference between that and when it arises in a religious tradition, is that in religion, that belief is taken on faith, whereas when it's in science, it's argued for. It's a matter of theory, evidence, reasoning, coming to a conclusion. At first, that sounds plausible. I have to admit that when I get done explaining that much to you, it probably sounds right to you, and I think there are really serious reasons why it's not right. First of all, faith is not the opposite of reasoning. And that's going to be a big part of the rest of this course. What is faith? How does the New Testament use that term? We're going to be very curious about identifying that, because it's striking that the word faith occurs maybe twice in the Old Testament and 146 times in the New Testament. What happened there? What's the shift? How do the New Testament writers view faith? What is it? And it's not, I will tell you this, it's not a blind leap into the dark. It's not the opposite of being rational. On the other hand, when it occurs in science, it may be included in a theory. But nobody's been able to mount an argument that shows that what they're regarding as self-existent instead of God, matter, numbers, logical laws, nobody's ever been able to produce an argument to show that that is self-existent. They can't do it. So there's a belief without proof on the one hand, and there's a belief without proof on the other hand. But that doesn't make them totally irrational. On the one side, the scientific view of a divinity is embedded in a theory and gets its persuasiveness from the way it functions in the theory. In religion, something similar happens with what is trusted to be divine. When Christians believe in God, they turn their lives over to Him. They experience God. God is not the conclusion of a proof or argument. People believe in God because they experience God. And that's what we're largely going to talk about in this course, the experience of God. So it's not that one side is irrational and the other side's rational. And if it's on the rational side, we'll call it science. And only if it's irrational, will we call it religion. That's wildly biased and false. And we'll be showing why in great detail in the rest of the course. All right, let's take another objection. This objection goes this way. When a divinity belief arises in a theory, it's used to try to explain how the world works. The divinity of numbers for the Pythagoreans, the divinity of atoms or the purely physical reality for the tradition from Epicurus right up to Daniel Dennett. Doesn't matter. These, when they occur in theories, don't carry with them recommendations about how to live. And when they arise in religions, they can't resist that. How to stand in proper relation to God always has to do with the way you live. The way you think of how you should treat other people, the way you think of human destiny, the way you think of what human nature is. And that's very much in view in religious traditions. And it's not there in the sciences. So that's got to be a big difference. And I agree with you that that is a difference, and it's important, but not crucial. For the reason is this. Those divinity beliefs that occur in the sciences don't draw conclusions about how you ought to live if this is true. But that doesn't mean that their position doesn't imply beliefs about how you should live. And a great many of the thinkers who hold, say, a materialist position do exactly that. They draw the implications. They say, since it's all as matter, since humans don't have a destiny beyond this life, you seize the day. You enjoy yourself as much as you can. Your ethics maybe extends to being a utilitarian. Do whatever produces the most good and avoid whatever produces the most evil, pain, something like that. It has nothing remotely like the standards of ethics that come to us in Judaism, Christianity, Islam. There are real moral laws that are built into the universe by God and by which humans are assessed and judged and will be judged by God. So there's a huge difference in how you live. The implications of a belief may not be spelled out, but that doesn't mean they can't be. The fact that the divinity beliefs arising in the sciences are concerned with how to explain this world and don't draw out the beliefs doesn't mean they can't be drawn out. It doesn't mean the beliefs don't have any such implications. And that's why it's a real difference, but not a crucial one. It doesn't show that the divinity beliefs, as they occur in the sciences, aren't religious. Well, I've been through, I think, most of the objections that have been raised to this. And I think that the objections pretty soundly fail. Let me just review those for a minute. One is that the gods, many gods and goddesses that have existed and still do in many religions, don't fit the definition of divine. And that's because these gods and goddesses are not thought to be divine per se, but are creations of the divine power and force. And second objection, there are beliefs in divinity as you've defined it in science. Doesn't that show that that's not a character, that can't be the definition of religion? And my answer is no, it doesn't. It shows that the people who do the sciences, who want to think that they are doing them independently of all religious belief, actually have a religious belief and just don't call it that. The next objection was that when there are these divinity beliefs incur in sciences, there are matters of theory and reasoning and weighing evidence and coming to conclusions in a scientific manner, whereas when they arise in religions, they're pure faith, where the understanding of this objection is faith is a blind leap into the dark. You don't know that it's right. You're just supposed to take it on trust, and that's the end of it. So let me make a point even stronger about that objection. Now put it this way. There is not a religion on this planet, and never has been, whose official scriptures, writings, advocate people to take it on blind trust. None. That's not true. Every one of them says that you have to see this as true for yourself to be a genuine believer. And when you do see it as true for yourself, you will be certain, much in the way of seeing an axiom to be true, or seeing 1 + 1 = 2 to be true. That's what they're talking about. It's not proof, but it's an obvious truth that becomes obvious to you in your own experience. It's not a blind leap. No religious tradition ever asked that of anyone. And then there was the objection that when divinity beliefs arise in theories, they don't have recommendations, a program for how to live, let alone how have rites and rituals and worship and holy days and so on. Well, that's all true, but it's irrelevant because there are major religions that do the same thing, that don't have any of those, and those are the Brahmin version of Hinduism and the Theravada Buddhism and some of the higher forms of Mahayana Buddhism as well. So can we really avoid religious belief? It seems to me the answer to that's no. Something has to be self-existent. Remember the argument from the sum total of reality? The sum total of reality has to be self-existent in whole or in part, because there's nothing for it to depend on. You can divide it and say, here's the self-existent God, and here's the rest, creation, and creation depends on God. Or you can say that the whole thing is divine. That's what happens in Hinduism and Buddhism. But one or the other would have to be true. So the point is, while human beings invent specific gods and goddesses, they don't invent the idea of the divine. It dawns on them that something has to be. And humans have always wanted to know about their origins. They've always wanted to know how they came to be and of what nature they ultimately are. And in answering that, they've always wanted to know what is the divine reality on which we depend. And then that's how they understand themselves. That's why this is important. It's why it won't go away. And it's why it's all pervasive, even though a lot of people pass it off under another name and claim that it's not religion. It's metaphysics, or it's science, or it's something else. Don't be fooled by that, because that is a trick. Now, I think we'll call it a day there. There's a lot for you to think over. And I hope you do before our next session, which will be devoted more to religious belief and its characteristics and its relations to other sorts of beliefs. So we'll end there for today.